I'm here to introduce Pam Arroway, who is with North Carolina State. Earlier this morning, I made the comment, I was going to say NC State, but I was corrected earlier. I was introducing some folks and said Cal State, and they said, excuse me, it's California State. So I want to make sure I fully quantify North Carolina State, not just say NC State. So she also wanted me to pass on that she's not an IT person. She's a statistician. So I don't know if that's good or bad news. So if we start getting into bits and bytes in here, she's liable to get a glossy eyed. So if she starts referring to, as I told her, blue and red balls out of urns, then the rest of us will probably start getting glossy eyed. So without further ado, please help me welcome Pam Arroway.
Thanks. Can everyone hear me okay? So I am, as you said, I'm from the Department of Statistics, and I say NC State, but maybe I'll check with the new chancellor when I get back and see what he says, if maybe there are some new rules. This is a project that I worked on last year as well as this year. This year I had the pleasure of working with Dan Updegrove, one of my colleagues here in the audience, who, if you don't know, has been handling the redesign of the CDS. So a couple of times I'll mention the redesign, and definitely if you have any questions about that, I might direct you to him rather than answer them myself. So I imagine most of you know something about the Core Data Service, or you probably wouldn't have come to this session. It's an annual survey instrument, and it's currently being redesigned for 2011. It's a web-based interactive database, and that part of it is also being redesigned for 2011. And there's an annual publicly available summary report based on the data collected from the survey, hence this presentation. So the data that I'll be presenting are from the 2009 fiscal year, and I want to note that the redesign is well underway. This is not something that started last week. Dan has been working on this quite a while, and we will have an open house. Both Dan and I will be there at 2:45 this afternoon in room 201 B and C to get your feedback on both the annual summary report as well as any thoughts you may have about the redesign. So we welcome feedback from everyone at that time and also in this session. So the underlying principles of the Core Data Service are that the data are identifiable by institution and that only campuses that participate have access to the data. So if you have completed the survey, you can see all the data from everyone who's completed the survey, and it's identifiable by institution, but there's also a very strict appropriate use policy that you're not supposed to post these data online. You're really only supposed to share them sort of as needed. And that's something else that's under review, and I'll refer you to Dan on that issue as well. So all the EDUCAUSE members, both U.S. and outside of the U.S., are invited to participate, and then also some non-members of EDUCAUSE are invited to participate, and this is one way that EDUCAUSE tries to sort of bring in new members. Multi-campus systems and community college districts can participate, but the way they participate is that the system offices don't enter the data, the component campuses enter the data. And if enough of those component campuses enter the data, then the system office would have access. Okay, so they have some incentive to kind of encourage their component campuses. So this year we had nearly 900 respondents, a little bit less than last year. Of those respondents, 790 were schools within the U.S. and 90 are schools outside of the U.S. And that's as of May. So in May, we froze the data set for analysis. If you have not yet completed your survey, you can still do that. Data can still be submitted until December 31st. So this is a snapshot of the data taken in May, but we welcome and encourage you to submit your data if you haven't already. For this year, and that will be accepted into the system until December 31st, and that will give you access to the data, the Core Data Service online, where you can get this more granularized data than what I'm going to show you today. All the data are captured electronically and available electronically, and for those of you who have completed the survey either this year or in the past, you know that embedded in the survey, there are numerous pop-ups and help links and navigation to glossaries and all kinds of things to help you in the moment when you're filling out the survey. And there's also some basic data auditing that's done in real time. If you didn't fill in a certain field or if you filled in something, you know, there's some very basic data checks that happen as you're submitting the survey, and you might get some flags on that. The survey basically is constructed in these five sections, and the report follows these five sections. I will note that the proposed redesign survey will have a very different structure. There was a session about that yesterday in which Dan talked about that. And again, the open house later, you can find out more about that. But this year's report is following the structure of the survey in these five sections. In addition to collecting the survey data, we also use the IPEDS data, and I have up here Integrated Postsecondary Education Data Service, but I think it's survey. At any rate, we get some data from them, some institutional data, and we use some of those variables in the CDS. You can get those in the CDS and also in our analysis. So primarily we look at things like student enrollment FTEs, so some of the variables that we look at we've normalized by student enrollment. Type of institutional control, like public versus private, and Carnegie classification. This is a big one that you see throughout the report. This is our primary way of subsetting the data for the annual summary report. So the Carnegie classifications, we use the basic classification from 2000, and these categories might be familiar to everybody. And you probably know at least which class you're in, your institution is in. The doctoral extensive is institutions that hand out 50-plus PhDs per year, and I'm giving you the very, very short description of what these categories are for right now. There's much more detail to it. In some cases, it's so many degrees or so many degrees over certain categories or things like that. So this is the very, very short description. The doctoral intensive is 20-plus PhDs a year, so these are in some sense smaller schools. The master's one, these are 40-plus master's degree a year, but they didn't hit the level of 20-plus or 50-plus of PhDs, so they may or may not be offering those. Master's two is 20-plus master's degree a year. And then the bachelor's institutions are broken up into a couple of different groups. We'll primarily look at the liberal arts institutions, and those are institutions in which at least half of the bachelor's degrees are in liberal arts areas. And the general category, which has less than half the bachelor's degrees in liberal arts areas. And then finally, the associate's colleges. Okay, so we use these seven classes extensively throughout the analysis, and our feedback from users has been that even this is not slicing the data fine enough, and that's what the CDS is for. So my purpose here today is just to give you a flavor of what's in the annual summary report and maybe encourage you to go on to the core data service and define your own peer group that you're interested in and do the analysis that you need. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of flavor of the report. So by Carnegie class, our respondents broke out this way. We have 108 doctoral extensive down to 144 of the associate schools. Notice that in the master's two category, that's our smallest category, we have 36 schools there. And I'll show you a little bit later in some of the analyses that we need to be a little bit careful about slicing that too thin, because if I start slicing that category up, I get pretty small sample sizes, so I need to be careful about that. The data presentation this year, last year, as I mentioned, I also worked on the report, and we made some changes to the data presentation. We've gone toward graphics and away from tables. So this report is a very top-level report, and as such, we wanted to give you graphics so that you can see the big picture of what's going on. We know that doesn't answer all of your questions that you may have, that you need to know about your peers and what your peers are doing and how you compare to them, but this is a top-level report. Any of the graphics that are in the report, if you're interested in the numbers that went into it, you can go to CDS and get, for the most part, you can get that data and look at it yourself. Also, this year, we've included time trends over 5 years. We started including more time trends in last year's report, and this year, pretty much almost everything is presented with five-year trends. There are a few tables that are just 2009 data, but for the most part, we've got everything in 5 years. And I want to point out that right now, the CDS currently only allows you to get at 2 years of data. So when I say you can go online and get the data, you can't quite get the 5 years right now. The redesign is considering that as well. And then also, so here's the statistician in me. I'm going to talk about quartiles a little bit. Rather than giving means or medians, we're going to report a lot of quartiles in this case to give you a lot more information about the distribution. So instead of just telling you where the middle of the distribution is, we're going to cut it up in quarters so you can see if you're in the first quartile, second quartile, third quartile, and so on. Okay, so I'm going to give you an example of that briefly. So if you don't remember from your statistics class, don't worry. I'm going to give you a little lecture here in just a minute. Okay, so I'm going to start with section one, which is the IT organization staffing and planning. And I'm going to start off with the centralized IT staff FTEs. So this is one of our quartile plots, or you might recognize it as a box plot if you're familiar with what box plots are. So let me zoom in here a little bit. So we're looking at basically right here just the doctoral extensive universities, just for an example. We have the median, so that line in the middle of the box is not necessarily halfway between the top and the bottom of the box, but it's the median. So 50% of the respondents are above that line and 50% are below. The top of the box represents the 75th percentile. So 25% of the respondents are above that point. So this is not the maximum. This is just the 75th percentile. The 25th percentile then is the bottom of the box, and so 25% of the respondents are below the box. So when you're looking at the box, what you're really looking at is the middle 50% of the data. So you can find your institution, not only which side of the median you're on, but whether you're, you know, way out in the tails or whether you're, you know, close into the distribution there. So we've divided it up into quartiles, 25% of the data in each of these sections, so that you can get a better idea of where your institution falls relative to your peers. Okay, so this is back to the whole graphic now. So what we have here is centralized IT staff FTEs over the 5 years. So as you look across the graphic there, there are five box plots in each class, and that's 2005 to 2009. And you can see there's some obvious patterns here that one would expect, and that is that the doctoral extensive universities have a lot of staff FTEs, and the distributions really have moved only slightly across years, not likely a real trend. But also notice that the MA2 bounces around a bit, and that's that little one in the middle at the bottom. And that's due mostly to the sample sizes in that group. When you get small sample sizes, these boxes are going to tend to bounce around and not be really accurate in terms of representing the population. So remember, there are only 36 in that group, so those boxes tend to bounce around a little bit. Much of the differences across the classes can be accounted for by enrollment. So remember, I mentioned the IPEDS data. This graphic shows the distribution of the student FTEs per centralized IT staff FTEs. In other words, how many students are being served. Now, this is only for the centralized IT staff. So while when you look at this, the liberal arts institutions are clearly lower than the other groups of institutions, they also tend to be more centralized than, say, the doctoral extensive institutions. And so this may not be... you have to take that into account to determine if this is a meaningful comparison across classes. But we also asked how much of the staff is centralized versus the total IT staff across campus, and notice that the doctoral institutions tend to have quite a bit of distributed staff. And that's something also that the redesign is going to get a little bit more into, because right now we basically are just asking how much staff is out there outside of central IT. So the redesign will get into more detail there. Functional areas, so what are these staff doing? The number one in all the areas is enterprise information system. For doctoral extensive, that has a median of 37 FTEs dedicated to that, or 22% of their FTEs. It's not quite as high in other classes, but it is the highest in each class. And for doctoral extensive, also everything else is way far below this. So 37 FTEs is the median for enterprise information systems. User support, which is the next highest category, is something like 17 FTEs or something. User support, again, that's the second highest category across all classes. And then after that, it kind of spreads out quite a lot, depending on the class of institution. But notice that even research, so these are the top seven or so here, and even research didn't make this list, even for research-intensive schools. Research is not one of these functional areas that get a lot of FTEs from the centralized IT. Not to say they're not doing research, just it's not in the centralized IT. Okay, so the second category, IT financing and management. In a lot of our funding graphs, or any graphs about money, we have adjusted for inflation. So in the report, you can see both the nominal dollars, that is what people reported, and then we've adjusted for inflation. So we've used the BLS inflation calculator to do this, not our own, you know, economic theory. So you can see it both ways in the report. Here today, I'm only going to show you those numbers adjusted by inflation. There's not a whole lot of difference. I mean, the pictures don't totally change, but if you're interested, you could see more of that. So after adjusting for inflation, this is what we see in the centralized IT funding that people reported. In each class, we see a little bit of an uptick in 2009, not so much in the whole distribution, but at least the upper end of the distribution. That is, that 75th percentile is getting higher. So some of the institutions stretching up there in the upper end of the distribution. And you also notice that in 2008, everyone was a little bit down. So there was sort of a little down in 2008 and back up in 2009. And we see that across classes. But a lot of the variability here across years can be accounted for by enrollment. So when we look at the IT funding per student FTE, and again, this is centralized IT funding per student FTE, so we have to keep that in mind. But you can see that shrinkage in 2008 much better. Each of those next to last bars is a little bit lower than the last than the bar before it. And then in 2009, we see this uptick. So the funding has mostly kept pace with enrollment over the course of the 5 years, maybe even outpacing a little bit by the time we get to 2009. Also, one main component of the funding is the operating appropriations. So this is also just showing that component per student FTE. And you can see similar patterns here with the 2008 distribution being a little bit lower and the 2009 distribution being a little bit higher. We also asked about staff compensation. this is compensation for staff, including the benefits. And you can see in 2009 a little bit of a shift up in these distributions, not just on the upper end, but kind of in the whole distribution. And for those of you that were at Casey Green's talk this morning, I wonder if this might be related to what he's seen in the last 2 years of the hiring and retaining of good staff being more of a concern for CIOs than in the past. But this is what we found in 2009, that those distributions have shifted up slightly. We also asked in this section here about how many computers are leased or owned by the campus, by the university. And we've, again, standardized that by enrollment. So this is computers per student enrollment, FTE. And predictably, the doctoral extensive universities have a lot of computers. They also have a lot more variability. So the lower end of their distribution is not, you know, far above the other classes. So there's a lot of variability in the doctoral extensive institutions. Notice that the liberal arts institutions tend to have a few more computers than the other categories down there in the bachelor's and the master's area. So we see a little bit of a shift up in some of the categories. I'm not sure whether it's a real shift, but particularly in the liberal arts institutions, that 2009 distribution has shifted up quite a bit. And so, you know, both the quartiles and the median have shifted up there. So that may be a trend that continues in the next year. We also asked, a lot of questions about replacing computers. So we asked questions about what funding is in the budget for replacing computers, what's your replacement plan for computers, you know, is it a three-year cycle, a four-year cycle. I'm showing you here, though, actual computers replaced, and this is the percentage of computers that the campus owns that were replaced in the 2009 fiscal year. And you can see that there's a lot of consistency here across classes. Everybody's kind of replacing within 20 to 25% of the computers on campus in a given year. Okay, so the next category is the faculty and student computing. One of the things that we asked about is help desk hours. And nearly all the institutions, first we asked, do you have a central help desk? And nearly all of them do. The number of hours that the help desk is available varies considerably across campuses, but not so much by class. And remember that 168 hours, so this is showing hours per week, 168 hours would be a 24/7 help desk. So that's off the chart. The top of the chart is at about 120 hours. So it's not to say there's nobody up there. Remember, the top of these boxes is the 75th percentile. So most campuses are offering 80 hours per week or less of availability of that central help desk. We also asked about student PC ownership, and this plot is not for all of the data. This is for private institutions only. So this is one of the cases where we took our seven Carnegie classes and we sliced it up a little bit more. More and more students are coming to private institutions with their own computers. And there's a lot of variability, but one thing I would point out here that you can't see in a box plot is sample size. So This category, associates institutions, there were only three private associates institutions that responded, so I would not pay attention to that box plot at all. That's pretty meaningless because the sample size is so small. But even in the doctoral intensive, we only had 19 there. That's kind of, it's not a horrible sample size, but for estimating quartiles, it's not great. So I would not take that too much to heart. But you can see in the other distributions there, you can see a shift over time upwards of more students coming to campus with PCs. That's not surprising. We can look at the same graphic then for public institutions, when we have sort of a different shape. But again, there are some sample size considerations here. There were only 8 respondents in the Masters 2 category that were public institutions, only 5 liberal arts institutions that were public, and only 12 bachelor's general institutions that were public. So those three, take them with a grain of salt. There's a lot of bouncing around there, especially in the liberal arts one. But when you have small samples, and these are sample sizes, by the way, for 2009. The ones over the last few years were sort of comparable. But these are categories where, as I said, once you start slicing them up, you don't want to slice it too thin. But let me show you these two graphics side by side. And you can see there the comparison of, in general, it looks that students that are going to private institutions generally are having computers more often than those at public. But really, you need to be careful about sample sizes here. And that's the one disadvantage of a box plot is that you can't see the sample size when you look at the box plot. Okay, we also asked a lot about connection speed. So this is showing connection speed in residence halls only. And this is another type of graphic in the report that you'll see extensively in the report. You probably can't read the legend at the bottom, but the gray part at the top is speeds that are greater than 100 MBPS. Oh, I got a typo there, MBPS. and the blue is 100. The yellowish, it's kind of puce, is 10/100, and the green at the bottom is 10 or 10/11. So the idea here is that the slow speeds are at the bottom, the higher speeds are at the top, and you can see a little bit of creep down. The blues and the grays are starting to creep down, meaning that speeds are increasing in residence halls. Okay, so that's sort of the story here. You can look at this across time and see that, for example, especially the blues are getting larger as you go from 2005 to 2009, particularly in the doctoral institutions. You see less of that. I mean, you see a little more bouncing around in the associates institutions, but that's the idea. Is the color shift downward means that the speeds are increasing. We also asked about issuing student email accounts and asked the question in a couple of ways, and we pulled out of this that either institutions are in the green, which is, yes, they issue student email accounts, and they don't have any plans to stop that. The yellow is they do issue email accounts, but they might drop it. They're considering that. The blue then is no, we've already dropped it. And the gray is we never offered it in the first place. So, of course, the gray area can't grow, right? So that has to shrink. But what you can see is, in general, if you look 2005 to 2009, so look from the left to the right end of each class, there's a lot of institutions that either have already dropped issuing email accounts or are considering it. But still, the majority of institutions are issuing student email accounts. This one I mostly wanted to show as an example of the kind of graphic you might see in the report. It's not surprising that most classrooms have wired connections, although in the survey, the current survey, we don't distinguish between a single connection for the instructor or multiple connections available to the students in the class. But these hanging box plots really mean that the distribution is very tight, up around 100%. So the top of the chart here is 100% of the classrooms have wired internet connection. So the maximum, the 75th percentile, and in some cases the median, all stack up at 100%. So those where the box plot has just slipped off the graphic means everybody reported 100%, essentially. Okay, so we see some of that. Now, when we look at wireless connections, we see a very different picture. And not surprisingly, we see a dramatic shift upward in availability of wireless internet in the classrooms from 2005 to 2009. So in all classes, we see a shift upwards of the percentage of classrooms that have wireless internet connection in all the classes. We also asked a lot of questions about technology in the classroom, a lot of different technologies, and I'm going to show you just one example. This is a graphic for the associates institutions only. So in the report, we have this broken out for each of the Carnegie classes, but I didn't want to go through all seven of them on this graphic today. But what we did is we asked them the presence of computers, document projectors, LCD projectors, televisions, smart boards, and clickers in the classroom. For the most part, we see that the technologies are increasing, the presence of technologies in the classrooms are increasing. This is not about use, this is only about the presence of those technologies in the classroom, except for televisions, which isn't too surprising. So computers, document projectors, LCD projectors are all moving up in terms of being more available in classrooms. Smart boards and clickers are also increasing, but this picture is pretty typical of the other classes as well. The smart boards and clickers are increasing, but they're still way down below, not nearly at the level of, you know, having computers and LCD projectors available in the classrooms. So this is for the associates only, but as I said in the report, there's one for each of the classes. Okay, networking and security. We asked about bandwidth to the commodity internet, and this is a graphic where it's clear that the doctoral extensive institutions are dominating here in terms of bandwidth to the internet. But really, you can see, and you may not be able to see from your seat, but if you get the report online and look at it, you can see increases in all classes. So the bandwidth is increasing across time in all the classes, and doctoral extensive universities are just way up there. We also asked about bandwidth to high-performance networks. and again, the doctoral institutions are the dominant subscribers to the high-performance networks, but these networks have in recent years added commodity internet transit and peering to their offerings, so this figure and the previous figure may not be really separable. That's something that will be addressed in the redesign, but this is just based on how we asked it in the 2009 survey, what they reported as bandwidth to the high-performance networks. We asked about wireless access on campus in different places, and again, I'm showing you one example here. This is for liberal arts institutions only, and this graphic is it's similar to the one I showed you before with these colors, but the green on the bottom is where people responded that, for example, on the left there, that's classrooms, that 0 to 25% of their classrooms have wireless access on campus. So you can see that the green is going down in each of the categories. Right, so less people are responding 0 to 25%. More people are in the next category and even the last category. So the yellow is 26 to 50%, the blue is 51 to 75%, and the gray is 76 to 100%. So across all those classes, you see the color shift down. Again, in this case, means that wireless access is increasing, in this case, in classrooms, public labs, student unions, and residence halls. And again, that was just for liberal arts but that's a typical picture across all the classes. This is the same kind of graphic, but these are different spaces now. So this is research facilities, library, administration buildings, and open spaces. So you can see, for example, libraries have a lot of gray. That is, many of the institutions responded that the libraries all have wireless access. The research facilities, those don't quite reach up to 100% because if an institution responded that they don't have research facilities, then this was sort of an NA, so that those people fall in the kind of off in the empty space there. So that's why the bars are generally lower for the research facilities there. We also asked about lots of technology, and again, this is one where we break it out by classes, so there's a ton of graphics in this section of the report. So this is for doctoral extensive only, but again, the picture's pretty similar. I think Dan mentioned specifically we're not going to ask about anti-spam again. Everybody's using anti-spam. The green all the way up means it's deployed. The yellow means piloting, so you can see some piloting in there, and blue is in progress, and the gray is considering. So as we go across here, on the left is anti-spam, so that's all green. Everybody's deployed that. Anti-spyware, there's a lot of green there, and that's been increasing over time. That's everywhere. Antivirus, everywhere. Personal firewalls, and I'll talk a little bit more about firewalls later. That's been increasing, and again, this is doctoral extensive universities, and wireless security. So you see the shift up in color is, again, increasing the use of these technologies. We also asked about network service technology, and I'll stay with doctoral extensive universities here. We only started asking about emergency notification in the 2007 survey, and so we only have 3 years of data there rather than the usual five bars. But you can see how in the last 3 years that's increased dramatically in this class and in most classes up to nearly 100%. IPTV, video over IP and voice over IP and web services, again, we generally see increases in all those categories. The places where, So in all of these, all of the classes, we see kind of the generally the same picture is increasing use of these technologies. And then one more is in this general category is identity management technologies. And we have here on the left biometrics, then electronic signatures, enterprise directory, and in fact, I covered it up so I can't see it, PKI, smart cards, tokens, and two-factor authentication. So you can kind of get a sense of the relative deployment of these technologies across different campuses. There's a lot of gray there, so there's a lot of people thinking about doing a lot of things with these identity management technologies. I mentioned before use of firewalls, so we did ask a little bit more about firewalls because they're an important component of the institutional security. Less than 1% of our respondents said that no firewalls are deployed on campus. But, of course, one firewall is not adequate. So this graphic shows the use of firewalls, and this is for the BA general category only, but the trends are similar in other classes. So notice on the right side, let me go from the left to the right. So there's external, there's a firewall at the external internet, that's the left side. High security servers is the next group, individual departments, personal site license, and then that last group is plans to implement another firewall, a firewall or another firewall. Okay, so there are some institutions out there that reported they're planning to do more. Okay, the final section of the report is on the information systems. So what we have here is, again, this is for one class only. This is for the Masters 1 institutions. So we looked at several different kinds of information systems. So on the left, we have student information systems, and the green represents using a vendor as a solution for student information systems. The yellow means a homegrown solution, and the blue means open source. Okay, so as we look across these categories, student info, financial, human resources, development, library systems, course management, and grants management, for the most part, we see campuses using vendors, but course management and grants management looks very different. Course management, we're seeing a lot of the open source there. That's not too surprising, and I'll break that out a little bit in a moment. And then the grants management, there's still a lot of homegrown solutions being used in grants management in institutions that have such systems. Okay, so primarily, though, all the green on this graph is telling us vendors are the primary solution that campuses are using. For course management systems, then, to look a little bit more in detail at the open source, even though most campuses are using vendors, this shows the breakout by the type of system for the master's. Oops. I'm sorry. So this one, I didn't have a little thing on there. This is for the all the classes, and this is for course management systems. So the other one had all the different systems for one class. So now I'm going back to looking at all the classes, what they're doing for course management systems. So here we've broken out. It's a little bit of a hodgepodge. It's some vendors and some open source. So the green is the Blackboard product. The yellow is the old WebCT legacy product. Blue is Moodle, and gray is Sakai. So if you notice where there's a lot of blue over there towards the right side of the graphic, that's the liberal arts institution. So they're definitely leading the charge in terms of using open source for course management systems, and by and large, they're using Moodle. You see Moodle popping up at other places. You see at the doctoral extensive, we're getting a lot of Sakai. And in the associates institutions, you still see mostly vendor. There's a little bit of Moodle creeping up there in 2009, but we'll see where that goes. And in fact, I should also have mentioned, this graphic doesn't have the 2005 data. This is only 2006 through 2009. So it says very clearly in the report that this is not a report about market share for any of the vendors, but this is just what people reported to us. Enterprise resource planning. This is, again, one of the graphics where we're showing implementation completed. That's green. The yellow is in process. And the blue is considering. So almost everybody's thinking about ERPs, it looks like. Many have implementation completed. And the yellow is people who are in process right now with this. We also asked about web portals. And so this fell in the category of information systems. It's not a traditional information system, but this is where it falls in the survey. Web portals are becoming ubiquitous. The green shows, again, those that are implemented, and the blue are planning. So there's a lot of planning going on, but definitely everyone's thinking of moving to web portals. Liberal arts schools are kind of the least willing here, with the current implementation around a little over 50%, and about 20% of campuses reporting no plans to implement web portals. So where the top of the bar ends, that means everybody up there doesn't have any plans to implement web portals. For those that are planning, the strategies that they're using, again, the green is a commercial vendor, the yellow is open source, and the blue is homegrown. There's a lot of people going to vendor solutions here, and it's still bouncing around quite a bit. You can see in the associates group, for example, the open source got squeezed out in 2009. That went away. But there's still plenty of other campuses that are using open source solutions for this. So the idea, as I said before, of this presentation was to just give a flavor of the report and encourage you to go online to look at the data service. You can define your own peer groups if you don't want to be lumped in with all the other doctoral extensive universities. You can define your user peer groups, and there's more data. So I didn't present all of the graphics that were in the report, all of the tables that are in the report, but also there are some variables that aren't even in the report that you could also look at. As I mentioned, the respondents are still welcome, so if you'd like to have access to the data and you haven't yet completed your survey, we'd love to have your data. And there's an open house later this afternoon in 201 BNC where Dan Updegrove and myself will be if you want to give us some feedback on the annual report or the redesign or any aspect of CDS. Thanks. So There's some time for questions if anybody has questions. So that's a question for Dan in terms of the redesign. The question is about exporting data from CDS, and right now, no, but in the future, yes. So right now you have to do some screen scraping if you want to export it, but that will be easier in the future, and also more than 2 years of data will be available. To the CDS, it's on the EDUCAUSE website under Major Initiatives. So I'm sorry I didn't provide the actual URL up here. Also, let me add, in terms of feedback, we're also interested in your feedback, for those of you that haven't already made contact with Dan, about how you're using the CDS and what other kind of analyses you're doing so that we can improve the analyses that we're providing and also collect sort of best practices and things that we can share with the users. So if you've done a report based on the CDS that was really helpful, we'd like to know about it. And see if we can do something to make that more available to the other users. Okay. Thanks.